like Buckable Moor, Buckable Moor. It's about hitting this, you know, how these things work.
Welcome back to Ungagged. I'm Neil Scott, and I'm about to barrage you with my balding, middle-aged male opinion. But don't let that put you off. We have Deborah and Cassie and Laura and others coming up to balance me, your da, lecturing you about what must be right, because I, a common sense sort of angry piece of ham, think so. A wee place on the web where the left can speak and not agree with each other. A wee place on the web where the pro-Scottish independence left can talk freely about breaking up Britain. Happily. The UK is a failed state. A state in which children go to school hungry, cold, and in mental and sometimes physical pain because the Rees-Moggs and the Farages and the billionaires getting richer through spouting what they learned of their England and Britain from their boys' own annuals of the 1950s and sometimes before. And welcome to a world where middle-aged people are destroying a world that young people and children want to save. A UK where middle-aged and old folk want to impoverish, in the words of one Brexit Party candidate, for 30 years in the pursuit of a mythical empire they were taught about in their propaganda-infused schools of the past. Look, I'm an old bloke. I'm over 50, I'm bald, I'm white, and I was taught about the empire that on which the sun never set. And I went to school in the 70s, a time when the empire was dead, and when a time of equality built on the spoils of an old empire, and after a massive European war for resources and markets was beginning to come under attack by the remnants of empire, the Thatchers and the Young Farages. I was brought up in a society being torn apart by sectarianism created by empire, living side by side with people I was taught were the enemy. For those of you who listen in America and other places who are not familiar with the accents of the UK, I have a Northern Irish accent. I was brought up in a time and a place where socialism was seen as being aligned with terrorism, and in a union leaking the shit of racism and sexism across society through TV and culture and the comics even that I read. The enemy within and without was all very familiar to me, and eventually I saw it for the lie it was, through friendships and falling in love with people across the barricades. Through not only realising other people's culture had differences, but the one I was brought up in had differences and many problems associated with it. Pop music and political writers and comic creators slowly made me think UB40, Stiff Little Fingers, 2000 AD, The New Internationalist, stealing books from my school library on Marx, The Specials, The Special AKA, Pink Floyd's The Final Cut, and even the tax-avoiding Bono all fed into me questioning the world around me, and I rebelled and my politics became very different from my peers. Northern Ireland is still suffering from the education my generation and the generations before me received, and the Alabama of the UK really does need support and solidarity from progressives across the world. The killing of Lyra McKee must be a watershed, and the cultural walls not addressed by the peace treaties of the 90s and the 2000s there must be addressed now. But as importantly, and perhaps more so, the aspirations of the next generation to live in a world where everyone experiences food equity, equity of experiences in education, equity of healthcare, and in fact more, the right to live in a safe environment that is no longer under attack from profit-making plastics and carbon dioxide, and indeed profit itself, is imperative. I understand my peers and those older than me and their aspirations of a new empire, and I understand siege mentality of an empire under attack from without. Brexit England is Derry's walls writ large. I understand the lie they were fed, but what they weren't told in their schools and their newspapers was the price of the superiority of the aristocracy in the UK. The untold millions who died early deaths in order for the British class system to prevail, and they to have their tea served straight from the clipper by a member of the peasantry. Fascism is on the rise again throughout the world, and in the so-called UK. Here in Scotland we do have a fascist empiricist problem, but perhaps the ragtag marching from the Orange Halls and the pitiful Union Jack bedecked rallies in Glasgow's George Square hide a bigger problem of the mythical aristocratic ascendancy that the middle-aged middle classes, who would not be seen dead beside their more vocal working class protectors of the union, believe. All of these things must be challenged, always. difference is amazing. Collaboration and equity desirable. Aspirational even. And profits really must not be the measure of success that eventually kills the entire planet while Farage drinks Pimm's on a scorched cricket pitch. I'm with the young people, and I support the young people calling for a turn to inherit this planet before my generation and those older than me vote yet again for a destructive path. A path that will lead the UK into poverty not seen on these islands since the clearances and the Irish genocide of the 1840s. Overdramatic? I'm not so sure. The path this time, though, is a reaction against science and sense. Science and sense that tells us that Brexit and Trump protectionary policies of the right are leading us to the destruction of the planet. The love of GDP as a measure of human progress will kill the planet. The profiteering UK aristocracy, the American corporate capitalism, the new imperialism of Putin and the massive growth of the Chinese and Indian economies, if unchecked and not based on the real needs of people across the world, will kill us all. And they blame it on you for not choosing to boycott plastic straws. Anyway, this is Ungagged. You can find us ranting like red flag waving slabs of ham, frantically and feministly. Did I just make up a word? On Twitter at _ungagged, on facebook.com/ungagged, and of course on our website leftungagged.org. This is Jackal Trades and 12 Character Building Society.
It's like a buck up or more. It's about hitting this, you know, how these things work. But.
We need the characters to act roles way beyond future. A relic from the past presenting you a useful factor to. You need truth when you're youthful, when you don't have a clue and you don't yet know who's cool or a penny to be struck. A scene must be set and you need the character to hit the back of the net. Hit the nail on the head, a word to the wise. The boy who cried wolves, tears streamed, butterflies. They are winged with a caution, signposted not forgotten. And if you live in Scotland, light a camp for every autumn. As the years pass, the cast expands en masse. The plot gets thicker in their spin-off plans. Every moment is the prominence to influence an audience. Fortunately, a lot of the wrongings are all onto this. To depict examples and dispense, what's advisory? You're gonna need the character, or don't even try it, mate. Not talking idle gossip, chitter chatter, more like enchanted banter. That actually matters, we need the characters. The rebels and the chancers, the misfits and the outcasts, the ones who give us answers. Need a vernacular of angles and fresh perspectives. Need a thread to string the sentence to direct you to the entrance. Need the mythical attachments and a wide range of accents.
A wide range of actions,
a wide range of accents. Broaden the language or expression is doomed. We're doomed to repeat, we're doomed to consume. We need to broom the room and a blood to break the gloom. With a boom from zoom, chew a shroom and presume a risk taker is a shape shifter weaving through folklore. 10 million mils per gigabyte, and no that is not. All speed is inconsequential on an infinite chessboard. Get fucked or get bored, get fresh or get old. I know what it's like to suffer, I've been troubled being in bother on the bright side. The dark nights help me see in colours. Rip mashes, ramshackles, fisticuffs and a kerfuffle. Rammy's always hemming in, someone's on the hustle. Some sick psycho fucker suckle, so much blood they buckle. Millionaires don't get huckled, muddy water still is muddled. No airtime for honesty, dissenting voice gets muffled. They typical at luster, they're drowning in the puddle of the algorithmic bubble. Freshly bench pressed from the gutter, bliss fully unaware of the mumble and the mortar, which fluctuates and stutters and distorts all truth that's uttered. It's all bark and bluster till you uppercut your knuckle. There's a cluster of chuckles, double dumbs down your struggles. It musters up an outrage that waffles and puggles, ruffles your feathers, and coupled with the muscle leaves your vision impaired like one sock in a puzzle. Those supple semantics are subtle like a shuffle. It's tug of war, tussle with trustful rebuttals, guzzling oxygen like naysayers, space shuttles. Rocket stubborn like my stubble after party huddles. Cuddle away the rattle when I don't feel fuckable, trying to tackle a fritterall when I don't look muggable. Some cunts need muzzled letters, rustle up a raffle. I seen a pretty vegan who summoned up falafel. It's fried eggs and waffles, hear the crackle of a frying pan. Remember, love is stronger than the battering ram. I've wiped slates clean and donder than the yonder. Knock pans clean off, often in jobs, so it's not fun. They resurrect the yam, breathe, feel the calm. Money is a scam, success is a sham. To predict is to gamble, to smile is to live.
I have nothing in my savings, I have too much to give. We need memories retained, frozen in time, and any conversation can bring it back to life. Karma's not a theory, it is merely common sense. It's a slow motion boomerang that knocks you off a fence. Come up, it gets postponed when you have the pounds and pence. When you sleep with one eye open, bedtime can get tense. We need mist wafters and dream weavers, bright sparks, shiny people and a pair of banging speakers. Fuck the vultures and leechers, we need leaders who hear us. We need feelers and healers and non-target driven teachers. We're self-destructive fungus if you look at the globe from the telescope. Gold diggers get told. A single lack of purpose discussed with undercovers. Knowledge is courage but disinformation smothers. Red onions are purple but reality gets muffled. More art than Garfunkel West, play the decks and shuffle. The bright side, the dark side.
You like making fun of really, really bad ghost hunting shows?
There's one in particular we enjoy making fun of. It's called Ghost Adventures, and it includes things such as
bad fashion sense,
grown men yelling at nothing,
outrageously large belt buckles,
too much hair gel,
and unfortunately, a lot of really cringy, painful, and socially unaware stuff too. I'm Cassie.
And I'm Max.
We're the hosts of Insanely Haunted, the show where we watch and review every episode of Ghost Adventures.
Find Insanely Haunted for free wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, how's it going? I'm Deborah Torrance from Ogai. This time on Ungagged, our theme is deer. I think I'm quite daring. I've done bungee jumps, jumped after a waterfall, played high octane dangerous sports, and I'm not afraid of anybody or to stick my craw in anywhere. This tends to get me in trouble, but as my brothers taught me, half the challenge of being a Glasgow hard man is attitude. So always out-attitude them. Be more intimidating, wittier in your comebacks, braver, more daring. When you were wee, undoubtedly one of your pals will have dared you to do something. Probably something really stupid that you instantly regretted. In my case, it was to throw a digestive biscuit at stationary cars at a traffic light on the busy road I stayed on. I was wearing rollerblades. I knew it was wrong. I gingerly chucked it over my shoulder as we passed on the pavement, and to all of our surprise, the guy jumped out his car and chased us all. With my rollerblades on, I managed to scale two fences and climb a tree. My friends without skates on did not escape so easily, and what ensued can only be described as neighbourhood mother's wrath. The driver of the car overreacted, in my youthful, naive opinion, and all I could mutter in defence of my action, that my pals never grassed me up for, by the way, was, "It was only half a biscuit." Sometimes being daring pays off, and sometimes you're getting shouted at by your ma for being stupid. Young people's brains are wired differently from adult brains. In adult brains, we calculate risk over reward, whereas when we were younger, the reward was more satisfying than whatever risks may be associated with gaining said reward. This is an evolutionary survival throwback. When we didn't live as long and being 17 or 18, you were likely to be an integral part of your tribe. Jumping a gorge to get to a berry bush may have been a more beneficial tactic than carefully weighing up the dangers associated with jumping a gorge. The more daring survived and thrived. Young people all over this planet today are trying to change the future. They are daring to dog school, go out and protest, and tell us adult brains to stop overcalculating the risks associated with decarbonising the globe and focus on the risk of not doing so. I'm guilty of it myself. I'm a big advocate for the environment. Mother Nature is my deity, and I hate what we humans are doing to her. We need to drastically alter the way in which we utilise the planet's resources. However, I can't think past folk who rely on oil for power to pumps for water, for essential transport, for heating in rural areas, for fishing communities, for farmers. My brain won't let me think past that, so I believe I need to be more daring. We all do. We should let these young people decide their own futures, because we're all going to be dead soon anyway. The Scottish Government, however, have made some bold, legally binding targets that I hope get met in my lifetime. By 2045, Scotland hopes to be carbon neutral. further to existing targets after reviewing advice from independent experts and the UK Climate Change Committee, Scotland will reduce emissions by 70% by 2030 and 90% by 2040. But is this daring enough? The young people out protesting don't think so, and pretty soon we will know for sure. So why not be as daring as we can be before we reach the tipping point? Otherwise, we're just flinging half a biscuit and running away.
We are sold narratives that to be daring is to be good, to be daring is to be innovative, to be daring is to be adventurous, to be daring is to progress ourselves and to progress humanity. But in reality, when we dare, we are met with barrier upon barrier upon barrier. So most of us don't dare. I am UNGAG's resident immigrant rights speaker, and this month's theme strikes a chord with that topic more than most, because immigrants are the darers of their communities. Anybody who has the gumption to uproot their lives and move elsewhere is an innovator. They are willing to completely start over, they are willing to jump through the barriers presented to them, and they are willing to have to overcompensate in order to prove their worth in increasingly hostile environments. But sometimes daring on their part isn't enough. The receiving countries need to be daring too. Daring to think that perhaps the world we currently have doesn't need to be the world we have. Daring enough to think that the way we treat immigrants doesn't have to be the way that we treat immigrants. Sure, this refers to absurd things, such as shutting down the American government for 5 weeks in order to throw a white nationalist tantrum, but it also refers to things that are so ingrained that many assume that they are permanent. Take, for instance, borders. We think of national boundaries and nations as being permanent, but in reality, the concept of hard borders and passports is a relatively new invention. Many academics who study nationalism focus on the idea that the modern nation-state is a 19th century post-Enlightenment concept that uses romantic ideals of the past to construct a narrative. Hard borders, and with them passports and immigration policies, mostly sprang out of that era. Prior to World War I, the only real barriers that existed for travelers or immigrants were against specific groups, such as gypsies and Jews. But the world we have today, with literal walls that separate us and long, unfriendly passport queues at airports, is not as permanent or as obvious that we might have been led to believe. We just have to be daring enough to admit that, and more importantly, daring enough to fight against it. We need to try to be at least half as daring as the immigrants who wish to make our countries their new home. It's important to remember that immigrants are daring as hell. As I talked about back in the Luxury Gap UNGAG last August, the way that we talk about immigrants needs a serious overhaul. As a quick recap to that story, stop using the word expat. Full stop, never say it again. If we call white people immigrants too, maybe people will begin to have the cognitive recognition that we're all in this together. But another narrative that we need to reconstruct surrounding immigration is the constant discussions that immigrants are helpless beings. Immigrants have a tremendous amount of agency, and yet they are almost always discussed as though they have none. As I've discussed in multiple podcasts now, us liberals tend to talk about immigrants, and indeed people of lesser means in general, in sympathetic terms. I used to be an aid worker in sub-Saharan Africa, and I stopped working in that sector after I realized that we approach it from a false understanding that Africans can't help themselves. It's the same with immigration. I often hear the narrative that immigrants are exposed to the worst wages, the worst treatment, and they can do nothing about it. And certainly this is true in many cases, but in reality, let's take the UK as our example, that is decidedly not the usual case. Quote-unquote unskilled non-EU immigrants are not even allowed to come to the UK and haven't been since David Cameron was elected. And unskilled doesn't even cover it. In April of last year, not a single work visa was granted to a non-EU immigrant for a salary below £50,000. I'm going to repeat that. In April of 2018, not a single work visa was granted to a non-EU immigrant for a salary below £50,000. So no, immigrants aren't as helpless as liberals like to think they are. But where this helpless narrative is true is, for example, when the government keeps changing the fees it charges non-EU immigrants. As I've mentioned in the past, the NHS surcharge was just doubled for non-EU immigrants. So for a family of five, when they submit their paperwork for a three-year visa, they must not only pay for the increasingly high application fees and for the pretty much necessary lawyer, but they also have to shell out £6,000 in order to use the NHS. This despite the fact that they already pay tax and national insurance. Many have literally been priced out of their home in the UK, and while most decide to leave, some decide to stay. And I can personally attest to the mental destruction that takes place when you lose your entire life due to unfair immigration policies. I've been diagnosed with both PTSD and severe depression, and I've been dealing with suicidal thoughts for a year now. I don't blame people for a second who decide they're going to remain in their home. But the loss of legal status brings with it other stresses. They're no longer allowed to be legally employed and are forced into illegal routes of money. So there is absolutely a place in this conversation to discuss how immigrants are treated in the labor market, but it's important to bear in mind that immigrants are a lot more, or they have a lot more volition than the average person. They're there in the first place. They have the gumption. They have the daring spirit. It's just that the system is geared to ruin this spirit. Likewise, we often say that immigrants were forced to leave their home countries due to dire economic situations, that people don't just leave their homes for no reason. Well, they don't really want to live here, they're just here because they're desperate. We shouldn't add to their misery by being awful to them. And I very much agree that we shouldn't be awful to them. But for those who are truly in dire economic circumstances, they're not even able to immigrate, because immigrating takes at least a bit of money to spend on lodging, food, transportation, and just various other expenditures. Refugees are forced to leave, yes, but other immigrants, not so much. They may leave for better economic circumstances, but that is different than them starving and being unable to clothe themselves. They choose to leave. They take the initiative. For every immigrant that is in the US or the UK, or pick your country, there are thousands back home who are sitting around going, oh well, this is just my lot in life, what can you do? I lived in a rural Senegalese village for 2 years. There are far more men sitting bored in the shade of a tree than there are men who have left to try and get to Europe. Also, immigrants choose the country they're in. Even refugees who actually had to leave want to choose their new country. We all remember the people who moved across Europe in 2015. They didn't stay in Greece and Italy. The Senegalese who go to Europe via the Mediterranean usually land in Italy or Spain, but they tend to try and move to France because they speak French. Again, immigrants are people with agency. I chose to move to the UK because I love the UK and I wanted to make it my home. The government had other plans, and I often get told by well-meaning strangers on Twitter that I should try to move to the much friendlier Ireland. But they miss the point with these suggestions. The point isn't that I want to be an immigrant. It's a pain in the ass being an immigrant, frankly. The point is that I want to go home. I want to go back to the UK because I chose that country, because I had agency. It's just that, you know, agency isn't enough. So immigrants are the ultimate darers, the ultimate dreamers. Our societies would benefit greatly if we allowed them to come from a both, you know, an economic and a cultural standpoint. But instead, the barriers that exist in their way are immense. So we need to respond in kind by daring to believe a different world is possible. And a different world is possible. Just look at where I currently live, China. This country hands out visas like candy. It is quite easy to immigrate here. And there are many people here in Shenzhen who are from Eastern European countries that aren't in the EU. There's a lot of Albanians, Serbians, Ukrainians. as well as people from Latin America. They have come and they have set up restaurants, coffee shops, bars, schools, marketing firms, and many other businesses. And they're here specifically not because they love China, but because the European Union and the US didn't let them in. So instead they're here, and China, of all places, is going to be reaping the benefits of having fair immigration policies. Say what you want about China, because I'm not going to while I still live here, but they at least understand that immigrants are daring, immigrants are innovators, and immigrants are going to be absolutely wonderful for this country. So I really hope that in the West we can be daring as well.
The first thing I remember is fire, light burned and ending, a nightmare haunting earthly desire, dark hearts calling, illusion shrouded mystical signs, black shards taunting, it's poison, danger seeping inside, smoke clouds ascend.
Shamima Begum, which, as an aside, is a really cool name. But Shamima Begum, the teenager who left to join ISIS and now wants to return to the UK, there have been two main narratives. Mainly, either she is terrible and must never come back, or she is terrible and must come back to face justice. But there was one angle that seemed to be lacking in the public conversation, and yet it's the most important angle to examine. The fact of the matter is, a 15-year-old girl born and raised in Britain decided it would be better to leave her family and everything she knew behind in order to join a death cult. What made her do this? As Twitter user AngryClassicsYet tweeted regarding the interview Begum gave on the BBC, asking what made you want to come here is not the same as what made you leave home. Here's another example, this time out of Spain. According to the Elcano Royal Institute, a person with Moroccan heritage is more likely to become radicalized if they live in Spain than if they live in Morocco, whether they are Moroccan immigrants themselves or their descendants. The second generation, in this case referring to the children of immigrants, are much more likely than are the immigrants themselves to become jihadis. And this is the case across Western Europe in general. The Charlie Hebdo, Paris, Brussels, and Manchester attackers were all second-generation immigrants. So we must ask, why do some children who grow up in Europe turn against their countries? The best answer I've heard regarding this topic comes from American comedian Hasan Minhaj. He's a correspondent for The Daily Show with Trevor Noah and is of Indian Muslim heritage. He gave an interview to National Public Radio's Fresh Air back in 2017 that has stuck with me. In it, he described the morning of September 12, 2001. The family woke up to the car window smashed in. Hasan was 14 and understandably very angry. His father, meanwhile, quietly took a broom and dustpan and cleaned the glass. Here's Hasan describing what happened next.
I look back in the middle of the street. My dad's in the middle of the road, sweeping glass out of the road like he works at like a hate crime barbershop. It's like, we got customers, we gotta clean this up. Zen, brown Mr. Miyagi, just like not saying a word. I run up to him like, Dad, why aren't you saying something? I'm not asking you, say something. He looks at me and he goes, Hasan, ye cheez hai to hote? Or ye cheez hai honge? These things happen, and these things will continue to happen. That's the price we pay for being here.
Hasan went on in the interview to say,
as a kid, growing up, going to school, taking honors gov in high school and learning about equality and civil liberties, you actually at a young age have this sense of optimism where you're like, oh, so I am equal. That means I shouldn't be treated this way. And that's where there's this big sort of differentiation between us and our parents. And, you know, that night, you know, when I tell that story of September 12th, it was the first night of so many nights where I kind of was put in this position where, do I think like my dad? You know, do I sweep up the glass that's in the road? Do I sort of just forget this hate crime? Do I sweep up the glass that way the neighbors don't see it and just go back inside and actually be grateful that they broke the windows on the car? They didn't break the windows to the house and try to, you know, come in and do something and just, hey, just count my blessings. Or do I use this as a moment to be like, no, this is wrong, and I should speak up and say something, because it's these moments where maybe my generation can move the needle forward a little bit and talk about this. But I even say it in the show, that pendulum swings back and forth for me all the time. I don't have a clear, you know, that this is the way you deal with this. There's sometimes where maybe my dad's right, and there's sometimes where I'm like, no, I think he's wrong. I think being an angry optimist is the solution.
So while joining ISIS is inexcusable, the UK and other Western countries are not off the hook completely for the decisions taken by these young people. For whenever quote-unquote legitimate concerns are raised about immigration, often the point of integration is discussed. Immigrants don't integrate, moan native populations. But in reality, it's the native population's refusal to see immigrants and their offspring as real citizens that is the problem. In fact, if you study second-generation identity polls in the UK, about 90% of them view themselves as British. And this is a higher rate than do the populations of both Northern Ireland and Scotland. And yet there are rarely claims by the public of their lack of Britishness. Well, okay, obviously there is due to the English backlash against the independence movements, but from a you belong on this island standpoint, you know what I mean. For example, my ex-boyfriend's father would always talk about brown people as, well, they can be British citizens, but they're definitely not English. He voted leave, by the way, because he didn't want the Turks coming. Thus, the children are born and raised in a country that clearly does not value their existence as much as it values their native peers. As Hassan said, they are told in school that they have the same rights as everybody else, and yet there's a palpable feeling that they are not truly members of the society. When I was conducting research for my master's dissertation, I read a book which examined the Turkish diaspora in Germany. A 17-year-old interviewed discussed that in Germany, the natives make it clear that he is not German, but when he visits family in Turkey, the locals there make fun of him for not being a real Turk. He said that he could understand how fundamentalism could take root, because the Germans will never see him as a German, so what's the point in trying? Whereas if he were to devote himself to Islam, the Turks might still take notice. In addition, there's a bitterness towards the Germans. Because he was born and raised there, he was told that he has the same rights, and just like Hassan said, he knows he shouldn't be treated this way. So combine being marketed a sense of belonging with a sense of revenge, and we begin to understand how this is happening. Not that this is an excuse to run off and join ISIS by any means, but we need to be aware of this problem if we want to prevent it in the future. Speaking of prevent, the program by that name in the UK has a lot of critics. I'm sure many among them are you and the ungagged audience. I have no opinion of the program itself, as I don't know enough about it to make an informed decision. But here are the statistics as of a year ago. About 45% of all referrals to the program are about Islamist extremism, and about 20% are over concerns about the far right. This was a fall in the number of referrals for Islamist concerns, and a rise in concerns over the far right. There do need to be programs to ensure radicalization does not take hold. As I mentioned in the I Raise My Voice Ungagged podcast back in December, I have experienced a terrorist attack. I really wish I hadn't, and I hope that others never do. And this is why we need to think very seriously about how to better ensure that diasporas in Western Europe, America, and Australia are respected. But at this juncture, we still have a long ways to go. I am writing and recording this 2 days after the government announced a revocation of Begum's British citizenship. This might have been a move that would please conservatives and probably even the centrists among the British population. A poll released yesterday, so the day after they stripped her citizenship, showed that 79% of the British public think that the government should have the power to take citizenship away, and that Begum should lose hers. When asked if they still felt that way if the decision would make a person stateless, which is very much illegal, 65% still answered yes. But if the UK wants to ensure that fewer citizens join ISIS, this would absolutely not be the correct move for that. Because what this move does more than anything else is send a clear message to every single second-generation British citizen that their citizenship means less than their native peers. This decision will not ensure that fewer people join ISIS. It's going to ensure the opposite. Now, Begum is not the only person who has lost their citizenship due to fighting with ISIS. In 2014, 4 people had theirs revoked, in 2016, 14, and in 2017, 104. But what makes Begum's case different is that in order to revoke citizenship, according to international law, there must be a second nationality for that person to fall back upon. You cannot make a person stateless. The British government claims that Begum also holds Bangladeshi citizenship, which Bangladesh says is not true. In addition, this is a high-profile case. The other ISIS fighters lost their citizenship quietly, whereas this time around, again, every single British person with immigrant parents is now acutely aware that their citizenship means less than their native British peers. And that is really terrifying. And the fact that a vast majority of the British citizens think that that is acceptable is a damning statement about the current state of the UK. As one last note about this whole thing, Theresa May spent years, literally years, campaigning for the United Kingdom to leave the European Court of Human Rights, and the reason she gave more often than any other was that the court used human rights laws to keep dangerous foreigners in UK prison rather than deporting them to their own countries. And yet here she is now advocating for a dangerous British citizen to remain in Syria. It's completely hypocritical, especially considering that at least in the UK there's infrastructure to monitor dangerous people. Syria obviously does not have that. It's one thing to view immigrants as not being human beings. It's entirely immoral in my view, and I spend my waking hours fighting it, but I can at least understand where people are coming from. Hasan Minhaj's father broke my heart when he said that people breaking his car windows was simply the price he had to pay to exist in America. But the allowance of native populations to continue these prejudices onto the children of immigrants, children who are born and raised in the West, has created an environment that allows for radicalization. Again, this is by no means giving Begum and other radicalized citizens a pass. She should be allowed to return to the country of her birth, but then she should be prosecuted. The argument that she was only 15 can perhaps be used to give her a lighter sentence, but we were all 15 once, this is not normal teenage rebellion, and while our countries have actions to account for and to fix, they are not an excuse for what she has done. But we do have to atone for our actions in this situation and work towards ensuring Native populations treat immigrants and their offspring as equals. It will be better that way for everyone involved.
If I ever had children, I would have to move abroad, 'cause some jumped up twat from Eton got a little bawdy, brought his petty problems to our schools and to our homes. Well, fuck you, Mr. Cameron, and fuck you, Mr. Gove. Oh, I am pissed off that I use my phone. The only say I get, yeah, the only power I hold, and it made no difference come election night. The scare campaign won just the same with a bunch of fucking lies. I keep my shoes in the hallway 'cause there's no other space. I pay £800 a month and the roof leaks when it rains, but it's not because of immigration we're earning minimum wage. There are other things that should be the focus of our rage. Oh, I am pissed off that I use my phone. The only say I get, yeah, the only power I hold, and it made no difference come election night. The scare campaign won just the same with a bunch of fucking lies. Well, the problem with democracy is it's practiced over here, is its power to the people. We prey on what we fear. Well, where do we go from here? Let's get pissed off and let's use our vote. 'Cause it's the only say we get, friends. It's still the only power we hold. Let's make a difference come election night and show those fuckers we won't be swayed by strong and stable lies. So if I ever had children, I would have to move abroad, 'cause I'm jumped up twat for reason. Got a little body, ask a stupid question, should we leave or should we stay? Well, fuck you, Mr. Cameron, and fuck you, Mrs. May.